Welcome to Work Passion Fit. I'm John Francis, your host. Each week, I speak with innovators and leaders and get to know what they are truly passionate about. Finding your passion isn't just about careers and money. It's about finding your authentic self. As listeners know, I myself am an owner and operator of a talent management firm called Theonera, and I've always been fascinated by the personal stories that lie behind the people and the companies. Work Passion Fit is all about discovering those stories. Today, we've got Catherine Ong, founder and president of WO Strategies joining us. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure having experts like yourself join the show, Catherine, because we were speaking before we went live on the air about my frustrations a bit with digital marketing. And as the days go by, it always seems to be more and more frustrating for me and just more confusing. So I'm really excited to have you on board to get a better sense of how you got into this business, but also to maybe get some secrets, if you will, inside secrets in terms of digital marketing. But before we get into the nitty gritty of that, I want to get a better sense of how you got yourself to this point in the president, the owner of WO Strategies.
Sure. Yeah. So I've actually been doing digital marketing for a long time. I built my first website in 1994, found digital marketing a bit later in my career, but I've been doing SEO for at least 15 years now. So prior to starting my own business, I actually helped launch and run the online marketing and analytics team for Ketchum, which is a global PR agency. So we service their clients globally. So working on a lot of big brands and helping them with a wide range of social media and SEO strategies. And my team actually did paid social and paid search as well. And then I had small children and wanted something a little bit more flexible. And so decided to launch my own business. So I've been running a solo consultancy, focusing primarily on organic traffic for the last, coming up in year five, I believe, actually.
Yeah,
and still tend to work with bigger brands. A lot of what I did both at Ketchum for the agency, as well as for some of the clients, because a lot of the clients were bigger brands, is help them come up with a strategy for getting more traffic from Google, the free part of Google, the organic part. But most importantly, use staff they already have on hand to get there. Because I really think that SEO probably should be owned internally if there is staff that's constantly writing. And so a lot of the clients I work with now are these bigger enterprise clients that would really love to have me set processes in place for internal teams. So for National Cancer Institute, so cancer.gov, actually helped them hire some internal SEOs and put together a process for managing search internally, training the writers, that kind of thing. I work with a couple other big Fed agencies and big journals, same kind of thing, where they already have staff on hand that they want to have own more of the SEO pie.
What is it about the marketing piece? I'm going to just backtrack for a second. The part that frustrates me the most as a company owner is just that things are changing so quick, right? And I don't know if I'm doing the right thing or the wrong thing. You hear all these buzzwords, and at times I get really confused in terms of trying to allocate the right funds and time for marketing. But aside from my challenges, what are the most exciting aspect from your perspective in the marketing component and especially the digital marketing component that you just find so intriguing?
Yeah. I mean, I am definitely a perpetual learner, and I like to self-learn, which is where I was at in 1994, building my first website, because that's, you know, before there were any Dreamweavers or anything on the market. Mm-hmm. So personally, I love the fact that it's constantly changing. So not only do I get to work with a bunch of different clients that have different target audiences they're trying to reach, but then, you know, the sands are shifting underneath your feet, which you just have to be the right personality to like that. And that's part of why a lot of my clients still have me on retainer sort of as a senior counsel, because in-house staff will get sucked into the weeds and sort of miss the bigger picture. And as an outside consultant, I can spend a lot more time on where Google is going, paying attention to like new patent filings, announcements they have. I've been in it long enough where I can kind of see the trends of where Google's going. So, you know, and it is constantly changing. So the last time I Google released a number. It turns out they change their algorithm 9 times a day.
Oh, man.
And most of the algorithm is currently powered by machine learning. So even Googlers don't really know what's going into the magic mix of ranking. And then when you get to like a local business perspective, local SEO is even more of a hot mess. So that's even harder because the rules aren't as clear, sort of. And then everything's personalized to the end user, search and social. So everything's filtered. So that's just a matter of fact. And even Google Analytics, which you probably use on your website, you know, that has, I actually had to train a Fed on that a couple years ago, mind you. So it's probably even more changes now, but I was trying to impart to them the fact that whoever was managing Google Analytics needs to sign up for announcements from the Google Analytics blog, because there's a lot of changes, right? And sometimes metrics will change. Literally, they'll just change what they mean, which completely impacts what you're looking at from a data perspective. And so anyway, the last time I knew how many changes they made a month was 10. So 10 changes to Google Analytics a month, 9 changes to just the Google algorithm. You know, and if you have more of an interest in being involved in, say, like people searching for your via voice, then it turns out Bing has about half of the market, actually, because they power the Alexa devices. So, I mean, Bing is not an unknown thing. Most people put that to their back burner. But if voice is interesting to you, it probably should come to the forefront, you know, one thing, something you're actually managing more frequently.
Yeah.
But that's why I love it, because I actually love the fact it's always changing. It also, because I like staying on top of the updates, it usually makes me more valuable to my clients, right? Because I can give them the latest about where Google's going.
Yeah, well, you know, I want to ask you this, and being valuable to a client, absolutely. It's like, if I thought I was confused before this conversation, I'm even more confused now. It's right, oh, okay, I'll hire this company, they'll do some SEO work, and I can disappear, and they can disappear. But it sounds like, no, it's like, it's more than a marriage. It's a lifetime commitment, right? But was there something in your personality or growing up that just this love of change and discovery? Because there's a lot of people that when you're saying this continual change would literally drive them nuts, and it's not their personality. Was there something that you found early on in life, or was it just something gradual that just said, hey, listen, I love this continual change and a continual excitement and newness, if you will?
Oh, no. I mean, so I give 110% of credit to the 4-H program. I mean, my parents are probably there too, but who got me into the 4-H program. But a lot of the stuff that I learned about picking up stuff, like on the job, for instance, I learned through 4-H. So my aunt was my 4-H leader, and I remember I was probably, so first of all, I was secretary of my 4-H club when I was 7. I was president when I was 8.
Oh, man.
I mean, like way early, right? And they have protocols that you go through when you go through a 4-H meeting. And you fill out a 4-H report card, which frankly, you're supposed to figure out what the goal is for your business, which could be, I don't know, growing zucchinis in the backyard that you're going to sell, maybe.
So were you a farm girl? Did you grow up on a farm?
I was, but the biggest, I grew up on a small working farm in Maine, but the biggest 4-H project that sent me to all the national conferences was actually building out a rainforest preservation organization, like a nonprofit. So I discovered the idea when I was 13, launched it when I was 16. So I was running a nonprofit at 16. I started event planning when I was 13 through the 4-H program, because there wasn't a teen conference in Maine. And I asked my agent, why is there not a teen conference? And they said, she was like, I don't know. Why don't you plan one? I said, okay. And then I negotiated with a hotel. I got room blocks. 200 kids showed up to a weekend. You know, and so I have, by the time I moved to DC and got out of college, you know, I had 10 years of event planning experience.
Yeah.
And event planning is definitely one of those things where sand shifts underneath your feet. No matter how much you plan things, day of, things go a little haywire, you know?
Yep.
And so with that kind of background, I think that plus running a nonprofit and figuring that all out. I mean, my 4-H agent gave me, and they still, it's an old copy of the book. I don't think it's been updated, but it's this book called The Kid's Guide to Social Action. Hmm. And inside there was every template you'd need for anything. And so she handed that over to me early, and I used that to write grant proposals for my nonprofit and press releases and media advisories. And I got coverage with local NPR and NPR, PBS affiliates. NBC followed us around for like a 4-minute segment. Yeah. So
yeah.
Anyway, the 4-H program definitely set me up for doing what I do now.
Is there something about marketing, and it's just as I'm listening to you, okay, so you're a younger teenager, 13, 14, 15 type of age, creating these events. Was it that uniqueness that made PBS and NBC and whatnot come to you? And is that also that being unique a trick with marketing for your clients?
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, so a lot of the things that tips I give them now about creating content that gets media coverage and backlinks, which will help you rank for SEO, are the same kind of tips that I used when I was 16. So yeah, I mean, I knew, first of all, rural Maine, it's relatively easy to get coverage. They don't have a lot of stuff to put in the paper. I remember that my mom shipped me a photo that was on the front page of the local paper about a moose crossing Main Street, Rockland. You know what I mean? So it's like that kind of news cycle.
Yeah.
So part of it's that. Part of it is also I coincided my pitch to NBC with them doing a segment. It was like a do-good segment. So they already had a slot for this kind of story. And then this was a youth-generated nonprofit where we went to other schools and educated them about how to save the tropical rainforest and why they would want to. And then they would take over the project and raise funds to buy acres of rainforest or take the curriculum and move it on to the next group, basically. So it was an interesting story anyway, right? And then it fit this content option that they had. So similar, like if you're going to pitch something, you have to know what beat the reporter covers, right?
Yeah.
And give them something that's going to slide into the content they need to create. So it's the same idea. It hasn't changed in, you know, however many years. But yeah, so in relation to showing up in Google search, it's also very similar. It's just most people are not applying these principles. So Google has flipped to a entity-driven intent engine. So they're really focused on, well, first of all, the entity means they understand people, places, and things and how they connect with each other. So making sure, especially as a small business, that you've cleaned up all the mentions of your people, your places, and your things, and use this thing called schema.org, which in the code helps the search engine bots actually know that you're talking about a local business because you put in the code, I'm a local business. That kind of is important. But then the other part from the intent perspective is actually taking a look at who is currently winning the race for the topic you want to appear for and why. Literally look at everything that's ranking on Google page one. How long are they? What kind of topics do they cover? Do they have additional resources? I did this for a client that was targeting senior resources, and everything that was ranking on page one had a text resizer option so the text could get bigger. It's clearly a ranking factor. And if it's not like an algorithm ranking factor, it's more a usability thing, right? Because Google can kind of watch as people are staying on those pages longer because they can resize the darn text. And I think that's the step that most people are not doing. So if I want to appear in Google search, it's a contest. And you need to beat out the other people that are there. And even John Mueller from Google will say this multiple times, like, what are you writing that's better than what's currently ranking? That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Create something better than what's already out there.
It almost sounds straightforward and simple. It's like just having a better story or a more cohesive story or an interesting story. Mm-hmm. It's just on the web before, you know what, you wanted to carry the conversation in a crowd. You had to have some, you know, had to make the people laugh and cry and engaged with them. If you just sort of had, you know, oh, I went out here and I did that and something just mundane, people would turn off. So it sounds very, very basic, if you will. It's something that we've been doing all throughout history for millions and millions of years. It's just now it's all on the web.
Yeah, I think people get hung up by the technical stuff sometimes.
Oh,
yeah,
I do.
I mean, it is really basic. But for instance, the stuff that gets pulled through on your little snippet and search, so say you're ranking on top page one, and you get like a URL and you get the title of your page, and then you get this little blurb. The little blurb comes from your meta description, which is in the code, right? Might be in your CMS system if you're in WordPress. But most people just write something boring there. But that's your ad. That's your chance to stand out in Google search. It actually should be one of the things you obsess about potentially the most, right? And I always encourage people to say, for instance, to go check out Old Spice and what they do with their meta descriptions, because everybody's familiar with commercials. Mm-hmm. And when you Google them, you'll start giggling because it sounds just like the commercials and it makes you smile. And of course, they're going to get more click through. They just, again, in the crowded space, they had that moment to evoke emotion, right? And got that click through. So some of it's really basic, but I think they get hung up because in order to execute it, you have to know a little bit of the technical part.
Hey, listen, let me ask you, I might be throwing you under the bus. So if this is not fair, Captain, you tell me. But so when this show goes live, what would be a neat, unique catching metaphrase for our podcast?
That's a good question.
Did I throw you under the bus there?
You did. I mean, you should probably use SEO consultant, maybe veteran SEO consultant. I try to stay, I don't like the word guru or expert, because I don't think anybody is in this space, but veteran for sure, because I've been doing the space long enough.
All right, I'll give you some, we still got some time before the show goes live. I'll give you some time to think about it. But
okay.
Hey, listen, tell me more about WO. You had mentioned that you've got some clients, some larger clients. Do you just focus in on the larger corporate clients, or, you know, if there's say a smaller, automotive body shop that's got maybe three or four facilities throughout the particular state and whatnot, would you work with them? Tell me a little bit more about WO strategies.
Sure. Yeah. So largely my sweet spot is organizations that are looking to internalize some of this SEO work or be more clear about what kind of results they're getting from their analytics. I kind of spend a lot of time in both of those spaces. And so most of the time that's larger organizations. So I helped launch healthit.gov back in the day. I work with cancer.gov and the fisheries division of NOAA. So I certainly have spent quite a bit of time on federal websites. A lot of people think they don't need SEO, but they do. They don't get any special treatment in Google search. So I know a lot of the ins and outs of what you can and can't do in the federal government. And then I actually have been working with a lot of journal sites. I'm getting a lot of background in what it would take to not only, most of the journal platforms are optimized for making sure their content's found in Google Scholar, which has a lot less search volume than Google search. And so I'm helping a lot of these journals make sure they're really optimizing their presence in Google search to get more overall traffic. So I like working with organizations that generally have a mission. I tend to work with a lot of science-based kind of organizations. I've spent a lot of time in the healthcare space. So I've worked with a couple of big hospitals. I worked with Cleveland Clinic when I was at Ketchum. That's where I tend to spend more time. The local search thing is a whole, frankly, different beast. So I work with organizations that are big and have local presence, and they need help optimizing them at scale. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where I spend more of my time versus a small business. That said, I do like having a coaching client ongoing, and that could either be an individual that is currently attempting to add SEO to their skill set, and they work internally somewhere, and they just want more help ramping up their background in SEO.
Yeah.
Or maybe a small business that wants to DIY it. So like last year I had a nonprofit, and that's kind of what we did. They had one person internally, and I helped them do an audit and create a plan and then ramp up that one person's skill set. And actually they're about double their traffic this year. So they were able to apply what I taught them and go off on their own. I was actually talking to a friend of mine, and he's like, "Oh, you're like the digital marketing training wheels." I'm like, "Kinda, yeah." That's what I want to be, actually. I want to like give you the skills so that way potentially you don't need me. Or if you do it, it's a lot less. And instead, I really want you to go on your own.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you this. I belong to a green environmental non-for-profit here in Kitchener-Waterloo in Ontario, and smaller organization. And precisely, you're tight for cash, right? You've got budget constraints. And I know the person that we've got working on the marketing component could always use some extra help. So I really like the fact, first and foremost, your focus is also on non-for-profits or charitable organizations, because those places really need some help, and they're doing some wonderful stuff. They just need a good coach, right?
Yeah. I spent a lot more time with associations, being here in DC, so associations and federal agencies, than I do nonprofits. But my background prior to starting my own business was about a decade in nonprofits. Yeah. So yeah, I have a soft spot for them for sure.
Hey, if somebody's interested in reaching out to you, what's the best way, Catherine?
Sure. Yeah. So on Twitter, you can catch me at KWATIER. It's my maiden name. You can also go to wostrategies.com. That's my website.
All right. Excellent. And I'll make sure that link's there on our site when the podcast is live. I'm interested to get your take on this question, because obviously when you're a young young girl being a 4-H member, and not just being a member, but also building the client base of the main organization, you seem to be an individual that loves change, loves to do things, and constant go, go, go. So in terms of turning everything off, relaxing, taking her nice and easy, and just rejuvenating, what do you do to just, you know, turn everything off and just recharge? Or do you?
No, I do. Even with two small kids, I do. I'm actually a huge bookworm. So part of it's that. I'm in a book club. But then I used to dance, which I've been rehabbing myself forever to get back into dancing. But I was a dance minor in college. And worked at a dance studio in order to get free classes when I moved to DC. So very addicted to dancing. So when I can. And with the little ones, I like to garden in the backyard. Growing up on a farm, we had a huge garden. Don't have as much big as one here in the DC area, but like to futz in the garden with them.
How old are your kids?
The oldest is 5 and the youngest 3.
And 2 boys, 2 girls or one of each?
Two girls and definitely budding dancers. Okay. Between the fact that I used to dance and was in musical theater, and I was actually in a semi-professional choir for a while, and my husband plays with the President's Own Marine Band at the White House. He's a professional clarinetist. So, the kids have got some musical interests for sure.
Oh, good. I've got 2 girls. They're somewhat older, 14 and 12. But talking about growing stuff in your backyard, my wife's a farm girl, grew up on a farm. And just getting them out and getting dirt and growing, putting the seeds in and enjoying the tomato or the bean or whatever. It's a nice little experience, eh?
Mm-hmm, definitely. Yeah, I wish I had more time.
Yeah, and they realize, hey, listen, that's where the food comes from. It's not from the grocery shelf, right?
Right. No, most importantly, I think this is actually why my kids are really into vegetables, because we've always had a vegetable garden. And when we lived in Falls Church, they had a really great farmer's market. And so, I was, really focused on making sure they got fresh vegetables, because the taste is completely different.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, there's no... Grabbing a tomato off the vine and grabbing it from the grocery store is night and day.
Yeah, definitely.
So, hey, listeners,
I was just going to say, for your listeners who are interested in picking up some SEO tips, I actually launched an Alexa flash briefing called SEO Tips.
Oh, okay.
And so you can find that off my website, or you can just tell Alexa to activate SEO Tips and get your daily tip for the day.
Hey, that's fantastic. I might actually do that myself. How many times I hit my head against the wall or scratch my head and wonder what the hell I'm doing. It's any little tip, even on a daily basis, is useful. I'm interested in your take on this question there, Catherine. In terms of success, obviously 25 years in the business, managing, running your own company. How would you define success for me?
For me or
for you?
That's why I do the training and the coaching. Actually, I get huge personal reward from introducing people to the SEO industry and digital marketing and growing their career. Now, I don't think it's good for everybody. Like I said, you have to be the right personality, but there's a shortage of people that know how to do it well. And so I really like introducing young people to the industry. So at this point I've trained about 16 young people from nothing in digital marketing. And they're all at a wide variety of places. So one used to be the head of brand for Reddit. 2 of them are at Google as account reps right now. One is the head of global entertainment partnerships for Facebook and Instagram. A bunch of them are at digital marketing agencies. And so it feels really good to find somebody where this is a good fit for them and to be able to launch their career. Which is why I still like to this is a big reason why the coaching is a big part of what I provide, because I also like to increase people's traffic, don't get me wrong, and increase organic leads. But personally, I get a ton of benefit when I get the light bulb moments. Mm-hmm. And, for instance, I had one client where I helped coach them. She met me at a show a decade ago, and she was a content person, really focused on social media, totally panicked because her boss had told her, or the organization had told her, that she would have to do SEO. And she was just not technically oriented, completely worried. So I coached her for a year. We did a technical audit together of her website. And it's a big website. It's like this big journal. So it's not small at all. And she actually, the organization has multiple of these websites. And then she got word that she was going to get moved to the IT department. So she's going to get managed by the head of development. And she was not really a buttoned up spreadsheet person, which is how developers kind of work. And so was really worried. And it's amazing. They're thriving without me, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Not only did they, you know, start throwing me more sophisticated questions, but she's still employed there. She's still thriving, you know? And so that's the kind of stuff I really get excited about. Even though it's also really nice to see those traffic lines go up. Don't get me wrong,
you know what? It's nice to help. Right. I mean, some people talk and ask me what, you know, what satisfaction do, what's the main satisfaction I get from my talent management side. And listen, it's like, I talk to some people, sometimes I feel as though I'm more of a counselor when you're out of work and there's, you know, a little bit of depression setting in and you're anxious about where's your job, being able to help a company and also an individual move forward in their career, it's very satisfying. So it's got to be extremely satisfying for you when you're able to empower people to take control of their career, their life, and also continue to learn.
Yeah. And to give them, you know, insight into a career where they'll probably always have a job. I think that's the other part. Because if you're the right personality, I give you the right basics, you can demonstrate, you can learn on your own, you're going to be employed for the rest of your life. Probably this digital marketing is not going away. If anything, more businesses realize they need to get on the bandwagon, and there's just a shortage of people that know how to do it well. So,
yeah. Well, no. And I'll be honest with you. I can phone 6 different marketing people right now and I'll get 6 different answers to my problem. And I don't say this negatively. I don't know if they always know the answer. Right. So yeah, precisely. If you're good at what you're doing, you should be able to be employed for some time.
Yeah.
You know, so, hey, listen, give us a takeaway. Like I said at the beginning of the show, I've always been fascinated and intrigued when I'm speaking with individuals like yourself. The marketing side, I almost look at it like a little bit of magic there. It's common sense, but for some reason, it just doesn't click in my brain, and it just seems both wonderful, confusing, frustrating, and magical at the same time. So I'm always intrigued when I'm speaking to people like yourself. But give us a takeaway about yourself, Catherine, for the listeners of Work Passion Fit. What's the one thing you want to leave the listeners with, who Catherine Ong truly is?
Oh, I am a search geek. I'm really a geek about organic search. that's my passion. I don't know if that's really a takeaway for your listeners. I mean, I think the takeaway for your listeners related to marketing is that it's not as complicated as you would think, but it means stepping out of your comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Really comes down to talking to your target audience, literally talking to them in this day and age, focus group, customer survey, sitting down, talking to them. And figuring out how your product fits their burning problem, right? Mm-hmm. And then writing copy to solve that problem. That's where the online part comes in. And so it's really pretty much that simple. I mean, the other bit, I guess, is that when you write copy, you just need to see who you're up against competitive-wise in Google search. Please use incognito at least. But, you know, go into Google search and see who you're competing against, and that will tell you kind of how you need to write. But it really just comes down to that, and then measuring, rinse, and repeat. So measure your success, see what didn't work, try it again. It's a lot of trial and error. A lot of it's the data part up front and really knowing your target audience. But then you just need to launch something and see how it goes, promote it, right? But then, you know, measure and try something different next time.
Listen, anytime anybody calls themselves a geek, I always look at that as a positive, because for me, if you're a geek in anything, that means you love it so much, you're immersed in it so much, and you found your true calling. So listen, if you're a search geek, that's great. I think that's the greatest compliment you should give yourself.
Thanks.
Hey, listen, Catherine, it's been an absolute pleasure. I appreciate it greatly. And definitely I'll stay in touch, and who knows, I may reach out to you with some call for help after I banged my head against the wall many times trying to figure out the SEO on my own part. So thank you kindly once again for joining us.
You're welcome. It was a tons of fun to chat this morning.
Hey, my pleasure. Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining me and Catherine Ong today. If you've enjoyed the show, please give it a 5-star rating and share it with your friends. If you've got a passion just like Catherine, I'd love to have you as a guest as well. You can contact me at john@theonera.com. That's John@theonera.com. or call me directly at 1-519-579-6671. Thank you for sharing your time with me today. And until we speak again, do take care.